Welcome into Locked On Knicks. The Knicks took their final game before the All-Star break against the Washington Wizards, and they lost big time. They kept it a game in the first half and then got completely shelled in the second half, losing 114-96 to the Wizards at home. So we will get into that.
The good news for the Knicks, though, is they are doing great on the PR front. A new consultant, Stephen Stout, who is an advertising executive, he went on First Take, and, well, he made the Knicks cool again. We'll have all that and more next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knicks is all rebound, back up, off the glass.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane. Knox foul from behind. Count it and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome in to Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw here. And boy, am I ever happy that it is time for the All-Star break. It feels about time, and sort of hoping that there are some changes in how the Knicks are going to do things after the All-Star break. We had that high of the four-game win streak, but now the last two games have kind of crashed back down to earth. Two-game losing streak now. Got absolutely destroyed by the Washington Wizards in the second half, which seems to be a team that the Knicks just cannot compete with for whatever reason this year. And I'm ready for the break, Gavin. What was like one of your takeaways from this game? I guess like where do you think we should get started? Because I don't even know where to start. It was just kind of a crap show.
Yeah, similar with you, just in the malaise. I mean, this is a bad Wizards team. Coming into the night, only two more wins on the season.
I will say that they've been in a similar situation to the Knicks where they've been kind of streaking lately. So they have clearly the best player on the floor. So I'll give them that much. You know, I feel like they should have been favorite.
Isaac Bonga. Far and away.
Yes. Yeah. Isaac Bonga.
So this game was just, it was like, honestly, like I usually, who am I kidding? I don't try to hype up the bad games, but this one was particularly difficult to watch. It was choppy throughout, really, really piss poor shooting from the Knicks, 3-for-23 from distance over the course of this game. The one shining light, and maybe I guess the best place to start, so I don't have an aneurysm on air, was Mitchell Robinson. I mean, he honestly, speaking of Bonga, he like looked like Shaq to Bonga's Todd McCullough in the first half. Like he was wrecking him, and the beauty of all the bricks was that Robinson had ample opportunity to collect offensive rebounds. He got 5 in just 18 minutes of action as he was in and out of foul trouble, but it was sort of like one of his vintage early performances last year where his fouling, again, had 5 fouls, prevented him from playing significant minutes, but he was just utterly dominant on a per-minute basis. And I was sort of screaming at my TV for Mike Miller to put him back in, and then I looked down and I was like, okay, for once there's a legitimate reason to keep him out. But I thought he was just awesome, and some of the stuff he did physically, it's weird, but it almost feels like he's getting stronger over the course of the season. I know he literally is. He's like lifting weights every day, but it feels like, and I'm sure part of it was just the competition tonight, but we've seen a jump over the last few weeks where he's really starting to grow into his body, and dudes are just kind of bouncing off him. And that's, I mean, I have very few joys as a Knicks fan right now. That is absolutely one of them.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, actually, most guys don't lift a lot of weights during the season. Typically, you see guys at their biggest physically at the start of the season because they lift weights all summer. And then during the grind of the season, like, you're practicing so much and you're playing constantly, so you don't really need to do anything to maintain your muscles so much. And usually guys lose muscle over the course of the year. Like if you look at like Kevin Knox now, I mean, he looked like ripped coming into the season. And I think that he's lost a decent amount of mass just because it tends to happen over the course of the year. You kind of bulk up beforehand and then, you know, you lose some mass over the season. But you're right. Like Mitch has looked really, really strong lately. I don't know if it's, I think some of it might even just be technique and how he's using his body. because he never really had a frame that looked enormous. You know, despite having really broad shoulders, his posture always seemed a little weird, and like, I don't know, he didn't seem like he had the perfect, like, strong NBA center body, but he seems to be growing into it. And one play in particular that really, like, hammered it home for me was Jan Mahimi on the Wizards. Certainly not the most talented player in the whole world, but he's a really big guy and really hard to move around and really hard to get position on. And there was one play in the first half where Mitch got an offensive rebound and just, like go-go gadget arm dunked over Mahimi while also, like, completely overpowering him. And I was like, wow, okay, this is different. Like, this is, like, the sort of stuff where, you know, when you start seeing people comparing Mitch to some of the better centers that have played the game, you know, physically and stuff, this is where you say, okay, there's some credence to that. Like, he's really dominant physically and can really bang with some of the biggest guys in the league now, I think. So that was really encouraging to me, and I definitely enjoyed Mitch's game. I don't know if I could say that for too many more guys in this game, and even with Mitch, it was sort of depressing in a way that he played as well as he did and ended up with 5 fouls, and I really thought you know, I'm not normally one to say this, but, you know, because normally my opinion as it comes to ref things is like, you know, the refs, like, that shouldn't be the reason that you say that you lost a game or this, that, or the other, because ultimately if it comes down to a couple ref calls, like, you didn't do enough to win the game anyway. But in this case, like, the refs on both sides just sort of decided that they were going to make it all about them in this game. They issued 2 ejections. They did one to Portis for throwing a ball at Shabazz Napier, and then they hit Mo Wagner with 2 technicals, which ejected him. They hit Elfrid Payton with a random technical at one point. They hit, I think, Mitch with a technical at one point. They're handing out technicals like they were candy, and I don't know. I didn't think guys were being that much more demonstrative than usual with you know, foul calls and stuff, but it just, I don't know, it annoyed me. It was one of the few games where I ever looked at it and was like, yeah, this is annoying to me that the refs are making this so about them, making all these ticky-tack calls and slowing up the whole game, and especially this game that at a certain point I just wanted to be over and just could not get over with because they kept calling so many freaking fouls. So I found it to be a very unenjoyable officiating game in this one, which, again, is not something that I normally complain about, but it was just particularly stark in this game.
If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans, but you may not know that Locked On Knicks is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Knicks fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Knicks fans in a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit LockedOnPodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help you achieve your Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit LockedOnPodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, and I think, I guess, in direct contrast to the officials, I mean, to your point, I'll admit, even though it's my job to sit through these games, I shut my TV off with 3 minutes left because I couldn't really take it anymore. And I guess in direct contrast to Mitch's dominance, it's worth talking about RJ Barrett and how he's really, really struggled, coming off that ankle injury after a solid first game against Orlando. And then in this one got off to a good start in the first half, was really getting to the rim. But right now it doesn't feel like there's any part of his game on a night-to-night basis that he can really glom onto and just say, okay, my shot isn't going. I might not be moving that well. Like, the ankle still seems to be bugging him a little bit,
but I can do this, and I can figure this way to help my team. And there's just that element isn't there. I mean, just 5 for 16. I think I saw there was a Kirk Goldsberry graphic that as of, I mean, this was before his comeback, and I can't imagine the last few games has helped that RJ was, I mean, the least accurate shooter at the rim in the NBA, and that's even more glaring when he also can't hit anything from three, was 0 for 4, and obviously he hasn't had the ball in his hands, like especially since Elfrid Payton has come back, nearly as much as he did earlier in the season, so that's a big reason he's not racking up the same assist totals. But another night with zero assists when passing was, I mean, at least in my mind, that was the part of his game I was almost the most excited about to begin the year. And it feels, like his baseline is much higher just because he's quite a bit more skilled and I think a much better competitor than Kevin Knox. And again, he's coming off the ankle injury, so you give a little credence to that. Small sample size, you give a little credence to that. But the whole thing with RJ recently, and I know this is an overreaction, so bear with me, it feels a little Knoxy. And again, I qualify that with I don't think he is Kevin Knox. I don't think he's totally going to fall off his second year, but it's more so a commentary on the infrastructure he's operating in, where he still doesn't have any shooting around him, and it just feels like about the worst case scenario for a guy who's a really young talent. And it's sort of concerning because even if this is a completely different team a year from now, I think these struggles take an emotional toll. And I'd almost, I assume he's close to 100% physically, but if he's anything less than that, if I were the Knicks, I would honestly sit him and let him get to a point where he's ready to go full bore instead of forcing him out there. Because I don't see the point of what's going on right now with him.
Yeah, I'm kind of in favor of that too. Like, there needs to be some, to use an old David Fizdale adage, they need to get him right, I think, because something's just a little off with RJ right now. And, you know, maybe it'll get corrected over the All-Star break too, because maybe he just needs some time to just kind of finish with that ankle injury and get some more shots up, you know, that sort of thing. Cause I get the feeling that like the second he was healthy, he came back. So he was sort of playing himself back into shape. Which, you know, it works sometimes, but it's not ideal. And so maybe the little bit of time off, he's going to have the Rising Stars game where he could just, you know, mess around and shoot a whole bunch, you know, have some fun there. Not with Mitchell Robinson, which is unfortunate. Mitch got snubbed for the Rising Stars game, and he's never going to get to play in it now because now he's going to age out of it this year, which is a shame because I would have loved to have seen some Mitch alley-oops in the Rising Stars game. It would have made it watchable. But anyway, so, yeah, I think even as you alluded to, a move to the bench could be useful for him because, I don't know, it doesn't seem entirely necessary that he would start. And, you know, I think actually if you brought him off the bench, you could play him, Frank, and Mitch together off the bench. And then maybe those guys even end up closing games at some point eventually. But they have all had pretty good energy together, I think, this year. I think actually you could say Frank, RJ, Knox, and Mitch have all really had good energy together this year. The young core, as it were, actually plays sort of like a young core. Maybe you throw Damian Dotson out there with that lineup. Finally banish Bobby Portis to the shadow realm and call it a day. And that's actually a pretty solid, I think, backup lineup, you know, that you could throw out there after if you're still going to start the veterans of like, if you took RJ out of the starting lineup, you could honestly make it almost like the lineup that they've been closing with lately, which is, not tonight, but, the Elfrid Payton, Wayne Ellington, Reggie Bullock, Julius Randle, and Taj, you could play instead of Mitch, who was closing with those guys, but play them to start, maybe get some shooting out there, and then throw all the kids out there together, let them, you know, figure it out in the second unit, and maybe you start getting into something, and, you know, then you could start making decisions too about how, you know, how good are these kids, how much faith should we put into them, who should we let go out of the veterans going into next year. Who should we bring back? Like, what are our weaknesses? What are our strengths with these young players? Then you're going to add another young player to it. So hopefully that's a really talented player, like a, you know, if the Knicks luck out, like an Anthony Edwards or a LaMelo Ball or something like that. And, you know, then maybe you're cooking. I don't know, but there's definitely, I feel like something, tonight was just kind of the final thing telling me that something has to change after the All-Star break as far as how these rotations are going and stuff, because I thought the rotations were just atrocious in this game, and I don't know where the mandate's coming from, if there is one, or if Miller just had a bad game coaching, was trying to play the matchups wrong or something, but the rotations I thought tonight were just atrocious, and it's very un-Mike Miller-like, because he normally finds a pretty good way to utilize guys. I just didn't see that tonight, so, you know, I just want to see something different when we get back, because I'm tired of watching the same stuff pretty much every night.
Yeah, and on that note, we've talked about a lot of the same stuff night to night, because even when the Knicks are winning, I mean, post-trade deadline, it just sort of feels like you're watching the same game every night. They've gotten – it's interesting that or maybe even ironic that Marcus Morris was the guy who said, you know, we're going to make it like the 90s. We're going to play like the 90s Knicks. And now that he's gone, it sort of feels like the 90s Knicks got transported to 2020, and they're not quite ready for modern basketball. I mean, I mentioned the shooting, but just like the lack of floor spacing, and even a team like the Wizards, who, again, I know are playing well, but in the aggregate are pretty bad. It looks almost like you're watching a different sport, and like, not that they had like an exceptional shooting night in this game, but in terms of their ability to, I mean, play multifaceted bigs and have varied lineups with a lot of different guys who can shoot the ball from different spots versus the Knicks just running like a clogged toilet offense, basically. It was just this stark contrast, and it's why, I mean, I think you saw Washington pull away, and even when the Knicks have been winning of late, it's going up against similarly offensive inept teams and playing games in like the low hundreds, high 90s, and it sort of feels like a different era of basketball. But on that note, Alex, I don't want to be repetitive, because I feel like my player specific complaints about guys up and down the roster are essentially the same as they've been the last few weeks and really most of the season. So I want to finish up talking about this game by getting into a new guy. Mo Harkless made his debut, 4 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, shot 2 of 7 from the field. Obviously not a sterling shooting night, but that was pretty much true for the whole roster. I thought he played a pretty decent game, but interested to get your perspective on him.
Yeah, I liked him. You know, he looked a little uncomfortable based off the fact that he just is on a new team in a new city, etc. You could definitely tell he was excited about playing for the Knicks, which he had said before the game. And, you know, it was okay. I liked his hustle. Surprisingly, I mean, I didn't really know this about Harkless, and maybe it was just kind of a one game thing, but his passing was, I thought, great. He made a couple of really nice passes. In particular, one was a touch. So he had two sequences that stood out to me passing. One was a sequence where he and Mitch, were sort of running together, and he passed it to Mitch, who missed the layup. Harkless got it back, and he sort of went up for what you might call a shot. It was difficult to tell. He might have actually been push passing it to Mitch, but either way, Mitch got the ball back and dunked it. That was a great little sequence where he passed pretty nicely. And then there was another one where it was him, trying to think who was running the floor. I think it was Peyton and Randall, and Peyton was running the floor. I think it was like a 3-on-2, and the defenders were pretty well positioned by Harkless and Randall, who were kind of both streaking towards the hoop, and Peyton, or whoever it was that was leading the break, passed it to Harkless, who was on the right, and then he just like really quickly touch passed it to Randall, and it was actually a brilliant pass, and Randall got a nice easy dunk. So I enjoyed watching him play. I think that once he gets a little better integrated, the Knicks might finally have, like, it might be sort of like a more functional, less high ceiling version of Kevin Knox. You know, of what you'd hopefully want to see Knox become, just a guy that can, rebound the ball a little bit, make some shots, you know, some spot up opportunities, and can pass the ball a little bit. And that, you know, that's sort of what Harkless seems like he's going to do. But I liked his debut. I thought it was pretty good. You know, despite the underwhelming box score stats, you know, he only had 4 points on 2-7 shooting, 0-3 from 3. You know, I'm sure those are normalized once he gets a little more comfortable. And if they do, I think he's a useful player, and maybe even someone that the Knicks can look at, you know, if things you know, if there's nobody to spend money on this coming off season, maybe they could just throw him a big 1 year deal. He's not super old, and you could bring him back if he proves to be a good veteran presence through the end of the year.
Yeah, that one touch pass was awesome, and that'll be interesting. I mean, he's certainly not a negative piece, depending on how successful of a shooter he is. Though when he was in Portland, that was always something that became more of an issue during the playoffs and during the regular season. He was always a fairly positive contributor, and the Knicks, honestly, they can use as many vets who defend their position and know how to play offensively as possible. So I wouldn't mind that at all. Let's get into continued dour Knicks news with this whole Stephen Stout fiasco, who the Knicks brought in recently to rebrand the franchise as quote unquote cool. And this was a disaster. He went on First Take, and I mean, some of the quotes, it almost felt like Mike Schur, who Alex, I know you're also a fan of, writer on The Office, and I think showrunner for Parks and Rec, The Good Place, I believe Brooklyn Nine-Nine for a stretch as well. He's awesome. It felt like he was like literally like writing like how a comedic sports franchise would operate, and the newest storyline was like, okay, now they're going to try to bring on a brand expert who no one's ever heard of, and he's going to go on national TV and he's going to compare himself to Drake, and then he's going to mention that the head coach is going to get fired accidentally, and the team who's like, there's a running joke about the team releasing statements that are increasingly absurd, and then they're going to release a statement apologizing for this guy going on TV and saying he doesn't speak for the basketball ops, even though they presumably knew about him going on TV. So this just sort of felt like one big like written joke, and maybe it's God who's doing it. I don't know, Alex, but I appreciated this from a big picture comedy perspective, I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, whatever. I don't think by and large that his interview was that bad. The two things that you pointed out were the worst parts of it. The rest of it was just kind of whatever talk. I just don't know why this guy who's supposed to be like behind the scenes, why the Knicks are putting him out there and even booking this appearance. You know what I mean? It's like, it's stupid. Like, this guy's supposed to be working behind the scenes, working on the brand. Don't put him out there like to potentially embarrass himself, which he did, because of course they're going to ask questions about like coaching and whatever else. Like, I'll read the quote that, you know, they'd asked about what the plans were for the Knicks, and bear in mind, Steve Stout is not doing anything with basketball ops. He's strictly here to make the Knicks look better in the public eye, and that's it. But of course, you're putting him on a First Take. They're going to ask him about basketball ops stuff that he has no clue about. And so he says, you know, they asked about like the firing and what the coach process is going to be like. And his quote was, and this is via the New York Post with a small bit of paraphrasing for clarification. They said there had to be a change in firing team president Steve Mills. That change will bring a new coach and new coaches that are going to help develop these younger players. And they got some young players. You see RJ Barrett, Mitch Robinson. They got something to work with. And getting a coach in there and ultimately getting a coach and a coaching staff that's going to help develop a team. That's what I expect to happen so that we can actually get to what you expect from a New York team. Having a coach like that who has the magnitude and gravitas so that the media would love to talk to him and believe him, I think that's super important. So two things here. First off, he basically said the Knicks are not going to keep Mike Miller, which Mike Miller's coached pretty damn good, all things considered, I think, and deserves at least a look. And I don't think that you could possibly look at what he's done since Fizdo got fired and be like, oh, he sucks. But like the other thing, that last line is what really killed. I was mostly with this. I was like, well, he just doesn't know what he's talking about. But the last part, I'm like, dude, thank God you're not making basketball decisions, because that's exactly what they did with Fizdale. He literally says, I want a coach that has the magnitude and gravitas so that the media would love to talk to him and believe him. And so all he wants is someone that's going to say all the right things to the media. And that's not what the Knicks need. The Knicks need a coach who's just going to coach some basketball and stop talking, because it's all Fizdale did was talk. Fizdale was like, he gave the best motivational speeches ever, you know, and gave the best, you know, press conferences ever, but on the basketball court couldn't draw up an after timeout play for the life of him. And I don't want another one of those guys. So, again, good thing that Steve Stout is not in charge of basketball operations. The other thing with the comparing himself to Drake, that's cool. I mean, I guess that's just the world that he's from. Like, he's from Sony and Interscope Records. Like, he comes from the record industry. So probably in that industry, behind the scenes, he might have the same sort of gravitas as Drake as far as taste making and stuff like that. But in the basketball world, basketball fans know Drake because he's a forward-facing figure. Nobody knows who Steve Stout is unless you're a big fan of music. So that was a stupid comparison for him to make, and one that he was for sure to get clowned on and should have known better. But the coach one, just his type of coach that he's looking for, definitely rubbed me the wrong way if that's what he would be looking for. And hopefully Leon Rose is not looking for the same thing.
Yeah, I think my point was, like, just the big picture irony of, like, the Knicks new PR guy instantaneously causing a PR disaster. It would be like if the Knicks hired, like, a fireman for the stadium and he just immediately set MSG on fire. It's just amazing. Like, I've come around on all, like, it used to annoy me, and I kind of like, it's like one of, like, the few small pleasures you get as a Knicks fan is kind of enjoying this stuff a little bit. And it honestly, I think someone almost should make a parody series. Like, maybe The Good Place just wrapped up. This could be Mike Schur's next project on just, like, an incredibly dysfunctional, like, sports franchise. It doesn't necessarily have to be an NBA team, but I think the Knicks have shown over the years, and I, to be fair, a number of other franchises, that this kind of stuff is ripe for comedic material.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's definitely a market there. You know, you can make a more comedy forward version of Ballers, sort of.
Yeah.
You know, like, Ballers is a sports comedy, but it's more of like a serious sports comedy. You could do something a little more like that, like 30 Rock-esque, because wasn't 30 Rock was like supposed to be like behind the scenes of like an SNL-esque show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I never really watched 30 Rock. That's like
it's great.
Yeah. But, yeah, you could do something like that where it's supposed to be behind the scenes of a basketball team. I could be into it.
We would get consulted on that, I hope, as Knicks experts. I think that could, yeah. that might end up being our next job, Alex. All right. Anyway,
that would be nice.
Yeah. I would, you know, I'm throwing it out there just in case someone's listening. On that happy note, we will wrap up this edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Probably we'll put out one more episode over the next 4 days. But outside of that, enjoy All-Star Weekend. Enjoy your time off from the Knicks. I know I will. They will be back next week. We will, again, most likely have one episode for you before then, and then we will be back next week. Enjoy your time off. Peace.